that I see that reminded me of, but I always say passed away. I hate to say
Take
that because in the
two
play,
side
some guy
buttons.
says,
Continuing.
he says, passed away, passed away. What do you mean passed away? He
Died,
died. That's right.
euphemism.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell some more anecdotes of people that you knew or were close to in the orchestra.
Aaron Chaffetz, I was close with Aaron Chaffetz, big viola player, remember?
Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
he and I palled around together quite a bit. He liked to go to the restaurant with me because he didn't have to order. He just waited till I finished. There was enough left after I finished that he ate. He unfortunately is had a bad deal. He is never has been. He was never what you would call a well person. I mean, he's always he was, first of all, he was way too heavy, and we just heard that last year he had part of his one of his legs up to the knee amputated because he had some gout. Or he's also been suffering with somewhat diabetic, and so he's not, you know, he's had his problems. He retired from the orchestra just about a year and a half, 2 years ago, at age 60. But he had given 30 years service to the orchestra, so he could retire at 60.
What identification do you have in the Pittsburgh community other than the orchestra?
I teach at Carnegie Mellon as part-time faculty. I played many chamber music programs over the period of years. Not so much lately, but years ago, we started out, if you remember, Michael Grabanier, our first cellist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just saw him
yes.
in San Francisco. He's now there. And Harry Franklin, the
Yes,
pianist, yeah.
yes.
Harry, Michael, and I formed a Carnegie Mellon trio at one time, did quite for quite a few years. And little by little, it sort of, Michael left and go there. And that was about this extent of. Oh, I was associated. When I first came to Pittsburgh, they asked me to coincide with the concertmaster position to start. This was in '66. To do some teaching at Duquesne University. But that I only did for the first year or two. And then Sidney Harth, who was head of the here at the Carnegie Mellon, asked me to do some teaching here because he was head of the violin department, music department, but also had, he would play solos here and there, would have to leave town, so he felt he wasn't, his pupils were not getting steady lessons, so he asked me to take that over, which I did for quite a few years now, till present. In fact, the school year just finished last. I was away when it finished. I was in Japan.
Yes.
That's about the extent of my, as I may have mentioned before, I'm not antisocial, but I'm not social. You know, I don't, I have to do my own practicing, sometimes not as much as I'd like, with the schedule of the symphony, my teaching at school. Other than that, in the summer, if I can, I play golf, watch a lot of TV. I'm getting to the age where I enjoy taking 40-minute naps in the afternoon. And that's about it.
I wanted to ask you, Mr. Seale, there has been so much discussion of late
About?
about the orchestra and the opera, the Pittsburgh Symphony no longer.
Well, what I hear is that that is true. That is, that's why they're building, rebuilding Stanley Theater, isn't it? What's it going to
That's
be
right,
called? The
yes.
Bennettdom or something?
Yes.
Yeah. Now that everything outside of the symphony is going to be going on over there. Ballet and opera will be going on over there. The symphony, as far as I understand it, and I may be wrong, but of course, it isn't that necessary for me to really find out because I'm not going to be here. But I understand that the Heinz Hall will be strictly for the symphony use as symphony orchestra, not to be doubled on those weeks to play the opera, to play the ballet when it's in town. They were supposed to arrange something to get together another orchestra to do that.
Well,
Now, that's all I know about
will the other orchestra exclude symphony members?
I can't tell you because I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work. I just don't know how it's going to work. Some people in the symphony are glad about it because you see, there have been times because of scheduling that makes it very rough for the symphony on some of those weeks where they have to rehearse for the opera or ballet, and it coincides with rehearsals for the symphony. And they feel that they're being stretched to the limit as trying to how many services they can do in 1 week, and then play a pops concert besides, and still play, you know, the. So it's been a little bit of a hassle. I've the whole orchestra doesn't play the opera, and the whole orchestra doesn't play the ballet because they can't fit all that in the pit anyhow. So about 50 to 55 players play the opera. The others then play another. We have what's called a young people's Tiny Tots series where they, you know. So the orchestras are many weeks of the year are split up. That will supposedly not be necessary if it comes about that's what they do. You know, get another orchestra. I'm sure there are some musicians in the city of Pittsburgh who are not associated with the symphony but would like to work what would be involved. What, how many weeks of opera are there? Six?
There's only going to be four operas this coming year.
Only four operas? Or four performances of each opera?
Four operas.
Four separate operas. And four performances of each. Three or four, whatever.
There will be Thursday and Saturday.
And the following Tuesday.
And Tuesday.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is. Been this last year, too. You're asking me, which I can't tell you definitely. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know whether it is going to work. But, I mean, I've heard about it. I know what you mean as to what's going to happen, I can't tell you. What is it that you feel that is the problem about it?
No, I was just wondering whether the city of Pittsburgh has come to a point where it can support another group in that fashion. I'm very pleased to know that we have enough.
Well, they have supported it, haven't they? The group that is the board of directors or whatever of the Pittsburgh Opera contribute into the payroll of the symphony for those weeks that they use the symphony to play the opera, and the ballet also does the same thing. Now, if that same money, instead of being contributed to the symphony, can be used to independently do their operas and ballet at the Stanley Theater, it can exist. Now, that's just taking money away from the symphony, it's true. That money that the symphony would have gotten to using the symphony musicians will no longer be there. Now, I don't think that will be a big deal for the symphony. I can't speak for that. I'm not in the financial end of the symphony's business.
Did you know Richard Karp?
No, I knew of him. I knew of him. I understand he was a very, very talented man. Yeah, yeah, I didn't know him. No, I didn't know him. I think when I first came here, I know the name. I don't think I was involved with him at all. I saw him a few times, I think, but I was never involved with him musically. I don't know, for one reason or another,
He played viola with the symphony.
Did he? Yes. But I knew him as a conductor, and the conductor, and Aaron Chaffetz used to tell me, and what's his name? Murray Feldman used to tell me also that he was a very good musician, very good conductor. There was also another one here at the time that it was before my time, was the viola player who was associate conductor here. What was his name? His brother is in Hollywood. You know the name, but I just can't think of it. He was associate to
Steinberg.
No, not to Steinberg. He was associate to Reiner for a while. Later he took on the Pittsburgh Sinfonietta. It's before my time. He was a viola player.
I can't think of his name.
I know you'd know the name if I'd mentioned it, but I can't think of it now. Because he was rather well known.
In fact,
he was, what's his name? When Mazel was still playing in the first violin section, this guy was very influential, seeing to it that he go to study with the Sabata in Italy to study conducting. And you know the name, I know the name, and we can't think of it. It might come to me.
As you're thinking about names, how about some of the other performers who come by? Any incidents you want to relate for us to know?
In the soloists
who have come, violinists or otherwise. Anything that might have happened behind the scenes that would be interesting for us to know about?
Oh, well, that's true. One comes to mind, which I thought was kind of funny.
All right, tell us.
Some years ago when Previn was here, we were to play British composer Michael. He was writing a concerto for three instruments, violin, violin, cello, with orchestra accompaniment. And I and Randy
Kelly
and Annie Williams were to play it. In here at the Berkeley Subscription, plus a concert in Carnegie Hall in New York. I think of his name. I have the tape. Did Michael, British composer, old man. Anyhow, I was. He wrote a very difficult for the three solo instruments. Very difficult for violin. And I was practicing and looking and trying to figure out this and that and this and that. It just so happens one of those weeks, who came as a soloist but Nathan Milstein. And I know Milstein from many, many years ago already. Very nice. You know, he's a son of a to conductors, but to musicians he's very. Friendly. Hates conductors. Anyway, he was rehearsing with us at the Tchaikovsky Concertos quite a few years ago, and goes back after rehearsal in the green room. I see, and he's Milstein. It's just wonderful. He was almost 80 then. No, 78, something like that. Now I think he just turned 82. And him, he likes to, he's with that fiddle day and night. He can't take it out of his chin. He's got, he's got this big droopy handkerchief, and he's always noodling, always, and there he goes into his green room, and he knows me, because he once told me he has a very interesting watch. I said, did you bring the watch? He said, no, I left it in London. So I go in, they say, you got a minute there. Stop noodling for a minute. I want to show you something. I'm practicing this concerto for three instruments, we're going to do it with Previn, and I've got to remember here and Previn. I said, there's this passage here. I said, take a look. I'm figuring out, and he's looking at it with me. I've got my fiddle, he's got his fiddle, he's looking at it. So he's going to try it. He tries it. I said, no, wait. I said, that's an F sharp, not that. He made it much easier by. I says, but. He says, change it. Make it easy. The hell with the composer, change it. Why break your fourth finger trying to reach that? the poo-poo there. That was kind of cute, change it. He'll never know. That was one incident which is funny. Another one, which goes back before the Pittsburgh Symphony. It's a little off color, but I think you're both old enough. years ago in Chicago, I was playing, they would invite me to come as concertmaster it's called Tri-Cities. It's on the Mississippi River. It's Davenport, Iowa. Three cities right on the river are called Tri-Cities. Rock Island and Moline. Those are the three cities. So there's enough concentration there for them to have a little orchestra, So they would ask me to come out just for Sundays to rehearse in the morning and play the concert in the afternoon. Every Sunday of a month and a half or so apart, Well, Chinook Milstein was playing solos one time. And we were playing the concerts in a gymnasium, and the rehearsal was in the gymnasium, and in a high school gymnasium. And in high schools there are, out there, men's boys' rooms and girls' rooms. So somewhere in the break, someplace in between the rehearsal and the concert, I was going to go to the boys' room. Just before I get to the boys' room, I hear fiddling, going away. I was standing there, I opened the door, and sure enough, there he's standing, still playing next to a urinal. Not next to a urinal, but at the urinal.
Yeah, the urinal.
Still playing, didn't need his hands for anything. I was sad. That broke me up. And I said, that son of a gun can't even put the fiddle down just to go to the bathroom. Oh, boy. There's so many. There's nothing too much that I can recall that, they happen, they go by, and then you forget them, and you can't remember. But some of them you can remember a little bit. Of course, the last one had nothing to do with the symphony, it's not by...
What I want to ask you, how does the symphony react to the local critics?
Ooh. They think they ought to shoot him.
They liked last night's concert.
Who did?
The morning paper.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I can't go along with the critics. Because I have seen so many times where the orchestra feels good about a concert, good about the conductor, they feel good and play well. Good concert, review. Other times, lousy conductors, good reviews. Can't win. And it's not a question of winning, it's just a question that I don't know. You know, Carla Pon was in on the trip with us somewhat. He joined us somewhere, whether it was Hong Kong or China or whatever. And so did this writer, Anderson, I forget his name. I think reviews in general, it takes your chances. I've always questioned, what qualifications do critics have to have to become a critic? I never know. I never know the qualifications. I disagree with them most of the time. I don't think sometimes they're entitled to their opinion, but they kind of represent. They put a little more on their opinion by have the authority by a newspaper to print a column that influences people.
They do practice sheer destruction.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is the blame who to blame? People should either disregard critics and find out for themselves. I know there are critics that review books, tell people good books to read, bad books not to read, for cultural reasons. They're supposed to uplift the humanity of a community, so they see good from bad. So they don't go to see a lousy movie. There's critics, a couple of programs on TV always with this Gene Siskel and Hebert. They tell you good movies, they put thumbs down and this, that.
And they often disagree.
They often disagree. Okay, that's okay. But, and these two critics, Crohn and Napone, disagree too. Okay, but I don't, but they have a certain amount of influence to the public, which I think is, if I could find every once in a while something where the critic will do something for the betterment of the cultural society of the city, okay, but it seems to be just the opposite. It seems, first of all, many people have written in articles about the critics here, and they really laid them out real cold, but they still got their jobs. What does it take? Wasn't it President Truman years ago wrote somebody about a critic because of his daughter's something? Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I just don't know what the answer is. I mean, either, the critic is first of all, would rather, I think, be up there performing and having this ability, this talent, and there he feels he's frustrated, he's stuck. All he can do is go listen and write. Is he more of a journalist, or is he more of a music, knowledgeable in music, or must he be more knowledgeable in how he puts the words down so it comes out very nice,
And they
know.
Do that. I read it, I don't know what the
That's
words
right.
mean.
That's right, just
all, lots of pretty words, but what's he saying?
Turn that off for 1 minute.
All right.
In Chicago, I don't even remember whether it was a recital or a soloist with the symphony. But in those days, this was during the years of when I was with the Illinois Symphony. And that time, I'll mention a name to you, Claudia Cassidy. Does that name mean anything to you? Claudia Cassidy? She was a very, very well-known critic. Later became very well. But at that time, she was a critic for the Christian Science Monitor in Chicago. And she used to come to the concert, and she always gave me very, very good reviews for every solo performance I played. Concertmaster, this and that. And there was another critic in town writing for she was writing for the Christian Science Monitor at that time. Later, she became the head critic of the Chicago Tribune. But there was another critic, and I went to this concert, and I saw that the critic knew me because he used to come to hear the Illinois Symphony Lab. So he asked me something about, this was in the first half of the program, during the intermission, he asked me about something. And son of a gun, I mentioned something to him, and I don't remember the exact words that I used, but pertaining to something, the next morning I pick up the paper. What I told him, not the whole count, but something I had said, he used just about verbatim, used the statement I said about the playing, you know. I guess critics at that, they're human beings. They're not anything else than human beings. But there have been many times, there have been very funny things about critics where they print the program in advance, you know, and the critic goes thinking that that's what they're going to play. And, you know, before the rehearsal or something, his accompanist or something has a hurt finger, so they decide to play something else. They don't announce it. And they don't know it. They write a review on the thing that was on the program, not on the thing that they played.
Have you played with the Bernstein?
Yes, yes.
Impressions?
Not many. Here.
Impressions?
I remember one thing. I remember playing the Leonora Overture, number 3, the famous overture of Beethoven. And I was surprised, beginning, long beginning, slow. Then it gets faster. First page is very slow. Well, I've never played it that slow, and it was murderously slow. I couldn't, you know, orchestra just couldn't sustain the bows anymore. It was so slow. And the fast was so fast. So the extremes of that. That I remember. I do remember talking to him. And we rehearsed at the Carnegie Hall. And I asked him about, I knew him from years and years ago, but I hadn't seen him for a long time. And I asked him something about, is the reason in, I said, I was born in Vienna. I just wanted to know, since there are no Jews in the Vienna Philharmonic, which is a big, famous orchestra, as the Berlin Philharmonic is, I think there's one Jew in the Berlin Philharmonic, no Jews in the Vienna Philharmonic. And he conducts Vienna Philharmonic a lot, all the TV programs. I said, what if my father and mother had decided not to leave for America then, and I would have been brought up in Vienna? Do you think I would have? Of course, that's just, in a way, it was a silly question, because I would have had to live through the Hitler days, you know, and I may not have lived. But if I had been the same person, same violinist there as here, would I have been allowed to play in the Vienna Philharmonic? And he said, don't ask, he says, be glad you're here playing. That's all. You know. But he conducts the Vienna Philharmonic a lot. Now, I don't know whether it's due. I think he may have said something about that there. Just all the Jews have left. You know. And what I wanted to know is the Vienna Philharmonic because of anti-Semitism, or is it because they just don't have any more Jewish musicians in Vienna? I don't know. I still don't know to this day. But there is one in Berlin, which you would think would be just the opposite.
Yes.
You would think Berlin would be more anti-Semitic than Vienna, but maybe not.
And also, how many Jews are still remaining in Berlin?
That's true, of course. Of course. But it was an interesting thought for me because, mm-hmm. I know I was 5 years old when I left. Just... what in case, what would happen if my father and mother decided for some reason or another? Now, it may have been the worst decision in our life to stay, which I'm sure it was. But first of all, we left not because of anything other than my father's family was already in Chicago. And here he was, married my mother, and I was born. And I do remember a few little things about Vienna. My father putting me the handlebars on the bike and driving me around. And my aunt, my mother's sister, had a grocery store. I remember little visions of that, but that's about all. But there was no problem in Vienna at that time. My father telling me a few stories about there was a law that this restaurant had to depict horse meat was being eaten and sold. But you had to specify it on the restaurant sign, there used to be a sort of a picture of a horse, you know, and that designated that they were serving horse meat, which was evidently not against the law, but it was against the law what's the word I'm trying to think
kashrus.
Of?
Kashrus.
Huh?
Kashrus? Being kosher?
No. It was against the law to not to admit that it's horse meat. In other words, if you went to, I remember years, many years ago in a suburb of Chicago, we were told about a beautiful restaurant called the Evergreen. And I was going to take this friend of mine, this violinist and his wife, and a friend of mine out to dinner. And we heard about this restaurant, Evergreen restaurant, out in the suburb there. We went, we ordered one huge steak to cut up for us all four. And then the next day, not next day, next week or so, I read in the paper, Evergreen restaurant has been closed for health reasons. They've been selling horse meat. I don't know what we had was. But the law was in Vienna, I remember my father telling me, that there were many restaurants, if they didn't show the horse and it wasn't designated as a restaurant that may be serving horse meat, all the rest were eating beef, regular beef, you know. But that, if you did have, I guess beef was hard, in those years was kind of hard to come by, and there was, you know, so they used to have restaurants that served horse meat. I don't know whether I ate it.
Mr. Siegel, these overseas tours,
mm-hmm.
How important do you think they are to Pittsburgh Symphony?
I think they are very important. Well, I could ask you that. Don't you think so?
Well, I mean, from my point of view, I think they are. I think the prestige is
That's
is
right.
Tremendous.
That's right. Absolutely.
And, I mean, having attended the festival
mm-hmm.
in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Was it last year we were there, or two years ago?
You were there 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay.
And then we had been told at that time that you were coming over. You were over for the Carnegie anniversary.
I don't remember.
When they marked Andrew Carnegie's.
Oh, I think something rings a bell. Yeah. But that wasn't just a trip to Edinburgh.
No.
That was we were on a European tour.
That's right.
This time it's
and
just
this
Edinburgh.
This is just
the Edinburgh
the festival.
Yeah.
I have seen over the years going to the festival. I have seen the orchestras from all over. And to me, I think it's extremely prestigious to be able to.
I think so, definitely. I think so, definitely. Because let's face it, I mean, every orchestra, every large major orchestra, right now, the Previn and the Los Angeles Philharmonic are in Europe. In fact, they played in Belgium just yesterday. We had a schedule up of the tour. And, you know, there are orchestras, the major orchestras are always going on tour, not every consistent year, but over a period of. In European, Berlin Philharmonic comes, plays New York and LA and Chicago, and sometimes doesn't get to Pittsburgh. But all the big orchestras kind of tour. I think it's prestigious for all of them to do. You can't expect the smaller cities to make tours because the budget is just won't allow that. You know, it's a tremendous amount of money to put an orchestra on a tour. You know, outrageous. It's a very, very difficult thing to take. You know, 100. Two people in the orchestra, plus this, plus stage crew, plus this. I mean, to put them all on a long three-week tour to China and Japan and Hong Kong takes a lot of money.
I talked to Paul Kaplan. He said that he worked very hard.
Yes,
everybody was sick.
Right. Well, he used my room. We shared room, you know. I would bring him in customers.
He always kidded me.
Says,
he needed your help.
Get a couple of sick guys in here.
Yeah.
And we had them.
I always had a feeling that it adds so much prestige to the city that it would seem to me
Absolutely.
That the city in some way should subsidize
I'm sure.
these trips.
Don't you think it does?
I don't know.
I think it may.
You know, it may be a very well-kept
Well,
city,
if not the city, if not the city
the
per
corporate
se.
City.
The corporate city, yes. I'm sure much money for these tours come from Heinz Corporation. I don't know about Allegheny International now. I think I understand they're financially having some problems. Yeah, but I don't know whether Mellon, U.S. Air, Revo, some of these big corporations. I'm sure many of them are. That's how the budget gets to be as good as it is in Pittsburgh, because they've done tremendous work in getting this endowment that. You know, practically the interest from the endowment alone can practically take care of half of a season.
Well, what I am surprised at is that the opera is not as successful financially.
I guess not.
Because, for example, for the coming year, 87, they're only going to have four.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're going through a transition.
They have raised the tickets.
Yeah, I'm sure they have to.
$45
But that's good. But that's par for the course. I was associated before I came to Pittsburgh. I was associated with the Lyric Opera in Chicago. I was a contractor and concertmaster for 7 years, but it was only a small season. I did that when I was at NBC, where he would let me take off some time, those 7 weeks. It was a 7 week season, a short season. Now it's a 16-17 week season. But that was a big opera company compared to this one, because here they don't get too many big names. I mean, you know, they can't afford it, the big name. Chicago Lyric Opera was getting, you know, Renato Tebaldi and Giuseppe DiStefano and all the big names, you know.
End of take two, side one, to be continued. Coming now for Hamlet.
What, Cheryl Mills?
Yes, he's here for Hamlet.
He is? He was here. I saw him I didn't play the opera that week because I wasn't in that. But I saw him.